now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back, Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Consumers Energy crews from Michigan are in New York right now helping communities get back online following the resulting destruction and devastation from this weekend's Hurricane Irene. To find out what they've been experiencing out there, I'm joined by Dan Bishop, Consumers Energy Public Information Director. Thank you very much for joining me, Dan.
Yeah, happy to do so, Mike.
So while East Coast residents were fleeing from their homes last Friday, dozens of Consumers Energy workers were heading into the storm. How was the decision made to send them, and how unusual is it to send crews out of state?
Well, basically, Mike, Consumers Energy, like a lot of utilities, are part of what's called a mutual aid pact. And what that means is that when there's trouble in one area, utilities will call their sister utilities in other places to ask for help. It really cuts both ways. Sometimes we are asked to send employees to a certain area, like in this situation. At other times, utilities from neighboring states come to our aid, depending upon the need and the weather situation.
Now, this is quite a journey, though. I mean, this certainly isn't a Midwest situation. Is this as far as crews have been sent before?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been with the company 29 years, and in my recollection, this is about as far as we've sent crews. As you indicated, they left the Jackson-Lansing area Friday about noon, and ended up in Batavia, New York that night, and that's where they currently are, although it looks like they're going to be moving later this week.
Well, I was going to ask you, because most of the damage that we're hearing about is in New England, actually, and apparently it's due to flooding. Are they likely to move into the more damaged areas then?
It sure sounds like it. I just watched the CBS News, and yeah, probably you're aware that the 8 million people lost power at one point in the greater New England area. Apparently that's down to about 4 million. It sounds like our crews, they've been working in upstate New York. There will be a request later this week that they move further east, maybe even as far as Long Island, where there's been significant utility structural damage.
With your experience of seeing restoration efforts, and when you hear that millions of people are out of power and the cause and the infrastructure damage, how long do you think that it'll take for some of these areas to actually restore power?
Well, I think we're talking multiple days. It's not going to be something that's going to happen tomorrow or the next day. Our crews are reporting structural damage consistent with very, very high winds. So you've got poles snapping off of systems, electric lines that are knocked down. People are being told to stay away from downed power lines. And when you're rebuilding infrastructure, that takes time. You got to have equipment, materials. You got to make sure it's all done safely. It doesn't happen overnight.
And the flooding now, does that produce a more extensive damage than simple wind damage?
Yeah, it sure can. In fact, there's reports where they've had barrier walls preventing water from coming in to a substation, for example. Those have been breached because of the amount of just incredible water that poured into some of these communities.
It sounds like we could even have situations where equipment needs to be replaced even at their main electric centers before power can be restored.
Yeah, there's going to be, you always look for like a silver lining, of course. Safety is number one, but companies that make stuff to get the lights back on, they're going to be very busy in the next many days and weeks in the New England area.
When utilities take on damage like this, I don't think we've seen anything like this around here, but something that where an area is completely demolished, how do those types of costs, how do they get absorbed by the utility?
Well, the practice, Mike, is that you want to restore the largest block of power initially. So the host utility looks at all the circuits, all the electric circuits, and they try to figure out where to concentrate the resources, where to concentrate the manpower to get the most amount of people back on in the quickest amount of time. And especially when you're dealing with visiting utility crews, it's really critical to have a clear plan that everybody understands, that people know when a line is de-energized so there's no safety risk. Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of coordination.
Well, I can imagine. Yep, it's almost like the Tower of Babylon. Now, one last thing. You know, questions. The question always comes up whenever you see, especially wind damage. Why don't we run our power lines underground? Why is so much of the infrastructure above ground?
It's a cost issue, Mike. You know, in new subdivisions, basically you have a mandate from states to build it underground. But, you know, most of the utility infrastructure is above ground, and the sheer cost of that is quite extraordinary. A lot of people like the aesthetics of it. It certainly looks better. When there's a problem, it can be a lot tougher to get the lights back on more quickly, though. That's, you know, identifying the cause and digging up the ground and concrete can be a real costly adventure.
Dan Bishop, Consumers Energy Public Information Director, thank you very much for joining me, Dan.
Thanks for the invitation, Mike.